The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Got Jim joining me as usual. I want to welcome everybody. If you're a longtime listener, great. If you're new, brace yourself. Might be getting something you weren't expecting. I only say that because we hear constantly that our podcast is fairly atypical in the financial advisory retirement planning space. So we take great pride in that, actually. So thanks for joining us. Jim, I know you've got a slew of questions. We're going to dive right in, unless you have something else to talk about. Or actually, why don't you share with me, because I haven't heard yet. Did you pull the trigger? Or are you heading back to Ohio, Kentucky?
Did I do it? That's right. I did do it this morning after contemplating yet again, Chris, from 7:09 to 8:01. And then when Andrew drove down the driveway to help me with some work around the yard, Andrew works with us in the office.
Yeah, and Jim makes him do manual labor at his house.
Exactly. Just on Fridays. When he drove down the driveway, I thought, oh, I got to make a decision. I don't know why this was so hard for me to decide. I have been contemplating, folks, what was it, Chris, at least for a month now?
Probably, yeah.
If I should go to Kentucky and Ohio again in the fall. I love fall. I want to see it in the fall. We've had some rather busy spurts in the office as of late. Let's just leave it at that. And it has taken a tremendous amount of my time and attention. And it just kind of freaked me out, Chris. And I thought, maybe I need to stay here. But actually, you were a big help talking to me yesterday about just doing it. And that I can work from there and everything will be fine.
Well, it is 2021, so, and the phone and email work as well from there as from downstairs. So I think you'll be fine.
True. But you know me. I overanalyze things forever. And this morning, I was coming up with every excuse. I'd look at one Airbnb, then I'd go to another, and I said, well, no, wait, let me search this area. I had to make a decision. And once, because I've already registered on Airbnb and it's hooked to my PayPal, once I click reserve, it's done.
It's very quick, yeah.
It's kind of like the Amazon one click.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, which I disabled because that was the death of me. So, anyways, I am going. I will actually be leaving next week on Wednesday. I hope to be at my Airbnb, which is in northern Cincinnati. I am kind of equidistant between Dayton and Cincinnati this time, mm-hmm. in some town called Monroe. So if anyone's from that area, if I made a big mistake, please tell me. But I wanted to see a different part of the area. Mm-hmm. And it looked on the map to be a little more ruralish and country-like as opposed to being right in the city, which is where I was last time. Mm-hmm. So it'll definitely be different. And there's a couple of apartment buildings out there that I want to look at. So I'm in some town called Monroe. It doesn't look like there's much in the town. And it's, according to Google, about 35 minutes to downtown Cincy. So, area.
You did enough research to make it sure it wasn't like the murder capital of the world or anything.
It didn't look bad. It's got grass and hills. There can't be murderers where there's grass and hills.
You don't think so?
I hope not.
I don't know that there is. I'm just saying, I hope you at least checked in, make sure it's, good
stuff. Now you're going to get me all freaking out again.
Okay, no. So ignore my comment.
So I'm in Monroe.
I'm sure it's beautiful and safe and happy, and the streets are paved with candy.
Well, I'm not going to stay there because of Halloween. It's a house I rented, so I don't want to be bugged by trick-or-treaters. So I'm going to check out a couple of days beforehand, and I'm going to get another Airbnb in Cincinnati. On the basement level of a house, and I'm going to stay there for the.
You're hiding from the trick or treaters.
I'm hiding from the children.
You're moving to a new spot just to avoid trick or treaters. Oh my gosh!
And I wanted to be closer to downtown because there's more than just the trick or treaters. I'm going to be attending a Halloween party, which I despise. I hate dressing up and going to Halloween parties.
How'd you get sucked into a Halloween party in Ohio?
Because I belong to that meetup group, as you know, meetup, the organization meetup.com, which I highly recommend people join, especially if you travel to areas or around. I belong to it in Colorado. I go on hikes. I met great people. I'm going to a meetup event tonight, Chris, in Boulder that I organized. There's 67 people who signed up for it, and I'm bringing tomatoes, pumpkins, and apples from my garden. So anyway, so this group has a Halloween party, and I signed up for it, and there's 110 people going, and I want to go. I need to meet people. I need to go out there and meet people. So I got a Mr. Potato Head outfit because, I like to garden, so Mr. Potato Head. And I'm going to go as Mr. Potato Head. So I wanted to be near there so I can take an Uber, although they're going to think I'm weird going into an Uber dressed as Mr. Potato Head. But I'm going to take an Uber to the event, so I wanted to get a house.
Good luck getting an Uber during Halloween party season.
Well, I hope to get one. But the house that I'm going to rent, I haven't done it yet. I didn't have time this morning after renting the first one, is about 1.5 miles from the venue.
Oh, so you could walk if you had to.
I could. No, I'm not going to walk 1.5 miles as Mr. Potato Head.
Well, take it off and abandon the costume and then walk home.
I'll probably get mugged. True. I guess I could carry
Mr. Potato Head. No, I think people would leave you the heck alone if you're walking down the street with a Mr. Potato Head on.
True.
They're like, stay away from that guy.
So, and it was good because it's a basement apartment. So I will rent it that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which is Halloween. And that way, if trick-or-treaters come, the homeowners have to deal with them, not me.
Okay. All makes sense now. Okay.
All right. I got it all worked out.
Glad we got that all cleared up.
All right. So anyways, now you're probably regretting asking me what's going on.
We need pictures of the Mr. Potato Head. That needs to be in the next newsletter. Yes.
We'll see. If I look good, I'll have someone take a photo of me.
Okay.
But anyway, so that is on the Friday. On the Saturday, they're doing – this is a wild group. And on Saturday, they're doing a Halloween pub crawl, they call it.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess we're going to meet in downtown Cincy itself. Mm-hmm. And we walk – they want you to bring cash so you don't stay at the pubs too long. And they're going to walk. They want you to. I'm not dressing up as Mr. Potato Head walking around downtown Cincy. That I can tell you. So I'm not going to dress up for that. But I'll go. And again, the crazy things I do to try to meet people so I can ask them what do they think of the area. And anyways, wow. But if there's any listeners out there and y'all live near Monroe, Ohio, which according to Google is about 35 minutes north of downtown Cincy. It's north of that highway that circles. I think it's 275 that circles the city as well. If you're down there, if you're around that area and you want to get together for a bite to eat or a cup of coffee.
Or take a picture of Jim in his Potato Head outfit and it to me, chris@jimhelps.com.
I will not be dressed. You think I'm going to meet a radio show listener dressed as Mr. Potato Head?
I'm hoping.
I thought that would be perfect with me because I love to God.
Yeah, no, so. It's awesome. Or you could have been Mr. Green Jeans or something.
Oh, darn. I didn't think of that one. That would have mm-hmm. been much better. Mr. Green Jeans. Mm-hmm. Oh, darn. Okay. Oh, well, I got the Mr. Potato Head outfit.
Yeah, that's
and,
fine.
And I could actually bring potatoes from my garden. I got a bunch of them. Hand them out for Halloween.
You're going to explain that on the plane, on the carry-on? No, don't mind these. No, these are just some of my potatoes.
I'm driving again.
Oh, that's right. Okay, never mind.
I'm driving.
So you can smuggle potatoes all the way back to Ohio.
I can. I can bring my potatoes all the way to Ohio. But again, if anybody is around Monroe or in Cincinnati, there are a few people that I met with. I'm going to reach out to them again, see if they'd like to get together. Some very nice people. One of them, I think, lives in Dayton, but he drove down to a place called Westchester, and I'm north of that in Monroe. So maybe he'll come down from Dayton again. He's the guy that gave me garlic, the most potent garlic I've ever had in my life. He knows how to grow garlic. But I'll reach out to him, too, see if he wants to get together again. But anyway, so I bit the bullet today, Chris. Okay. I will be gone until the 1st of November. Then I'll start driving back,
okay.
Weather permitting. And maybe I will have someone take a photo of me dressed as Mr. Potato Head.
Perfect. Well, now that we're 11 minutes into the show, let's get to our first question.
Well, longtime listeners know, okay, this is cool. A new listener is like, what the hell?
What?
And they already stopped listening.
I told them at the front end this time. I warned them. I didn't even know this was going to go this direction, but they had fair warning that this was a podcast unlike they had ever heard before.
Well, so. You asked. See, people, we tell you all the time, Chris and I do not talk beforehand. He has no idea. I don't even know what questions I'm going to answer. I just yank him onto this pile of questions. Mm-hmm. This is totally unscripted, and this proves it
clearly.
More than anything. Yeah. Okay, so we did get a question about 2 months ago. It's about Social Security. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
I don't quite know what she's asking, and maybe you can help figure it out.
We'll try.
It is a Georgette. She does say, greetings, Jim and Chris. I am from the Pacific Northwest. She doesn't tell us what state. I'm going to assume Oregon or Washington. That's pretty much it for the Pacific Northwest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Idaho would be Pacific Northwest. I think that's the Mountain West.
Coeur d'Alene area might still be Pacific Northwest. I don't know. There
is it.
It just feels kind of northwesty to me. But probably
I'm
going to
guess she's in Oregon or Washington. Okay. But anyways, it is a Georgette. She says the Pacific Northwest is a gorgeous area that likely won't run out of water and has exceptional garden and hiking if you're interested.
True.
I did contemplate that, but I'm still for some reason hooked on Northern Kentucky and Southern Ohio. I have no idea why. I enjoy your highly informative podcast, especially the repertoire, right? Repertoire. I think she thought she was going to trick me on that one. I nailed it. That was easy.
You stumbled through. I don't know, nailed. But
repertoire. It's
okay.
I mean, it's spelled repetit, but I knew it's repertoire. I especially like the repertoire between you and Chris. Well, that's good because we had a lot.
Big dose of that today.
I have a retirement and Social Security planning question, but I need to give some background. I'm 58 and will retire in 2023, but I was previously married for more than 10 years. When I retire in 23, I will have a state pension paying me about $40,000 a year, and it will be adjusted for inflation. She says, I will not claim my Social Security until 70. It will be approximately $40,000 a year at 70. My partner is 65, does not have a pension. He will claim Social Security when he reaches 67, his full retirement age. He will get $20,000 a year at that time. We are planning on getting married in June of 2023 after I turn 60. I bet you can already guess my question. And I paused there because I have no idea what her question was. Can you figure out? I had no idea. I had to keep reading.
Well, the only reason she'd want the magical age 60 is when you can remarry and not have your survivor benefit from a previous marriage that lasted longer than 10 years affected. You won't have it affected if you, or your ability to claim it would not be affected if you remarried after the age of 60. This has nothing to do with spousal benefits. So those of you thinking that road, that was different. We're talking survivor benefits here. That's got to be why they're waiting till she turns 60. Her ex must have a good-sized Social Security benefit. So if he passes away, she still would have the ability to claim it because she waited until after 60 to get remarried. That's my guess is where she's going.
Okay, very good. So she continues. I bet you can already guess my question. You got kind of close. I think you did. Again, I couldn't quite understand her question. If I should outlive my ex-spouse and wait until 60 to marry, are there any problems in my plan to receive my ex-spouse's Social Security death benefit and then suspend mine? If he passes away before my full Social Security retirement age, which is 67, will I be able to claim his and leave mine to grow until I turn 70? How do I go about doing this through the Social Security Administration? Sincerely yours, and we will call her Georgette.
Okay. So I think she's on the right track. She's considering the right things. I think it is good if you had an ex that you were married to for more than 10 years, considering what benefits you might receive from them before you decide to get remarried is a good idea, especially they're close to this. If you're 48 and then you're saying, well, we better wait 12 years before we remarry because of this, that, and the other thing, you're probably letting the wrong thing drive your life choices. But when you're close, you should, I think, take this into consideration. You can be partnered up. You can be living together. You can be everything except legally married prior to 60 and have it not affect you. If she were to remarry before 60, she then will not have access to her ex-spouse's survivor benefit if he were to predecease her. But waiting till 60, even if she's currently married when the ex passes away, waiting to 60 leaves the door open for a survivor benefit. She didn't mention claiming a spousal benefit, and that is good because that is something that at any age, if you remarry, the spousal benefit you might have access to is attached to your current spouse, not to an ex-spouse. So it is specifically survivor benefits that we're talking about here that have this attachment to age 60 remarriage. I'm making this point over and over again because there's a lot of confusion out there and people kind of combine and morph together spousal and survivor benefits, and those are two different things. So be clear on that. So she asked a couple of kind of sub-questions within her question. If she waits till 60 and her ex passes away before she turns her full retirement age, or even before she wants to turn her own on, she absolutely could turn on that survivor benefit, leaving her own unclaimed until 70. Now, that might be the right move unless the ex's survivor benefit is bigger than what her benefit will ever be, even delaying till 70. If that's the case, then it's the survivor benefit that should be maximized in her situation, because it's going to last hopefully well past 70, because hopefully she lives way, way, way past age 70. If her benefit is the one that's going to ultimately be the biggest, bigger than the survivor benefit she might have access to, again, we're assuming the ex has passed away at this point, then claiming the survivor immediately and then switching to hers makes a whole lot of sense. And then she gets the maximum, we call it being paid to wait. She's waiting on hers to get it as big as possible, being paid along the time. Normally, she's going to have to wait until she turns 70 if her ex hasn't passed away. But if the survivor benefit is bigger, it is possible if he's got a really big survivor benefit, that might be the biggest benefit she ultimately could have access to. And if she were to claim it at 61, 62, if he were to pass away fairly early in her lifetime, She might be making a mistake by claiming the survivor benefit first. It might make sense instead to fire up her benefit and then switch over to his benefit, his survivor benefit, when it's its biggest, which won't be at 70, it'll be at her full retirement age. So there's a, you know, a lot of moving parts here, and I wanted to point out both of those scenarios because either might be possible. She didn't share with me what the survivor benefit potential was from her ex-spouse to whom she was married for at least 10 years. So both should be considered, and you'll find one of those paths is likely to be the most, make the most sense. Now, this is kind of assuming that the ex passes away at a fairly young age. Let's say he doesn't pass away until after she's 70. After she's 70, she'll have turned on her own benefit, which she said was about $40,000 a year. And if he passes away, if the survivor benefit's bigger, she can switch to that. If the survivor benefit isn't bigger, it doesn't help her, so she's not going to switch to that. She's going to keep her own. So once she turns her own on later on, she was planning on 70, there's not as confusing a choices, essentially. It's either better to switch or not, and you stick with whatever is better. Now, all of this, all of these comments are connected actually to one assumption. And that assumption is that she is not subject to the government pension offset, which I don't believe she is, given the facts that she provided. She mentioned she has a state pension. Well, that immediately raises warning flags, because sometimes a government-sponsored pension will be in lieu of Social Security and expose you to reductions to your own Social Security benefit in WEP, windfall elimination provision, or reductions to spousal and survivor benefits in the GPO, or government pension offset. The fact that her Social Security benefit is as big as it is at $40,000 a year, that tells me that she was a long-time participant in Social Security and likely is not covered, not participating in what's called a non-covered pension, a pension that was in lieu of Social Security. I think she paid into both. My guess is she'll let us know if that assumption is correct, but that's the assumption I'm making, and I'm pointing it out because if she is subject to GPO, that will jeopardize part of or all of, depending on the size of the Social Security benefit from her ex-spouse, any potential benefit she might receive off of his record. So I wanted to lay that out there as a footnote or a disclaimer, if you will, that a lot of the, you know, strategies might be undermined by reductions to the survivor or spousal benefits calculations due to GPO reductions. So I don't think she's going to be affected by that because her pension isn't enormous. You know, usually the enormous pensions for state workers are those who only participated in a pension and didn't participate in Social Security. And her Social Security is big enough where it's not like it was just part-time work before they became a teacher or something. The benefit wouldn't be that big if that was the case. A benefit of $40,000 a year means someone participated in the system for quite an extended period of time. So my guess is there's no GPO or WEP issues here, but if there were, that would have to be taken into consideration as well. So I think that covers everything that she was asking, and maybe a little more.
I think it did. Excellent. Alrighty, we got a lot of questions kind of relating to Roth conversions in light of the changes that are coming along.
The proposed changes,
Might. Mm-hmm. And again, folks, we don't know what is ultimately going to happen with Roth conversions, especially after-tax contributions. They're looking, at least the proposal is, to prevent people from converting post-tax IRA dollars and 401k dollars into Roth IRAs. I do think that will pass, but who knows? We'll see. Mm-hmm. The difficulty, folks, is I fear, Chris, they're going to pass it in December and people aren't going to have much time.
Right.
Do keep in mind, before we get to the questions, listeners, in a good year, when there's no tax changes, and maybe the stock market is neither up huge or down huge, it's just trotting along with reasonably low volatility, That would be a good year. In a good year, IRA custodians usually come out around December 15th and say they can no longer guarantee any transaction after December 15th will take effect before December 31st.
Yeah.
They warn you. They warn us as advisors. We are on their institutional level, and they are warning us all the time. I fear, Chris, the government passes this somewhere around between Thanksgiving and Christmas. People are all busy with the holidays. They aren't paying attention. The government passes this, and then everybody is trying to jam in changes. Mm-hmm. And custodians are going to come out, I think, and end up saying, forget December 15th. We're not guaranteeing anything.
Right.
Because they're going to be inundated, folks. Mm-hmm. So here's the difficulty. If you truly do feel this is going to pass and you have after-tax dollars in your IRA or in your 401k, you may want to consider trying to get them in a, if that's your goal. It's not a goal for everyone. It's not appropriate for everyone. But if that was your goal and you had already determined it was your goal and that's why you were doing it to begin with, you may want to try to get a hold ahead of the curve. The risk, they never pass it. And you end up converting this year and paying the taxes on the taxable amount in order to get the tax-free amount into the Roth. And they never passed that provision. So that's your risk. You do it and you didn't have to. But the other risk is you wait for them to do it. And then the custodians say, there's just no way we're going to get this done. And we are not going to guarantee it and stop calling us. That's the big thing. They don't even want you to call them and hound them on it. Because they're telling you, we'll get to it when we can behind hundreds of thousands of other people who are trying to do the same
thing. Well, I think there's my... I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to react to this because they freak out. But there's, I think, a fewer number that actually could have benefited by doing a knee-jerk reaction versus something else. And my point is, if you have access to the after-tax portion separately already, why are you waiting? There's no reason to be waiting. You should get that out of there so that you can get it into a Roth IRA so that future growth, it's not like the after-tax part gets bigger, right? That basis stays the same. It's fixed. Waiting doesn't do anything to it. Other people can't get to it yet. Well, if you can't get to it, you can't do anything about it now. So yes, they're going to pass it and you're going to be like, well, darn, it's too bad I'm not retired and have access to this yet, or I haven't reached the age where they grant me access to this. So then it's going to be people that have it in there and it has to come out blended or pro rata. That's the ones you're talking about. Those are really the only group of the three I just defined that face this quandary of, I'm going to have to bring it out in a pro rata manner. I can't separate them easily for just because of the way it's accounted for inside of my particular plan. And the question is, do I do it now, pull the trigger now, and then realize that, oh, I could have waited. I could have waited for a better year to do it, but I pulled the trigger because I was worried I never could do it down the road. That group, I think, is not that enormous. And I think everyone's going to be freaking out when it's really just the one group. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's just that third group I defined that are facing this issue.
Yeah, it's pretty much people who may have, as part of their strategy, the do-it-yourselfers who listen to this podcast, Chris, they're pretty smart folks. A lot of them are engineers writing their own Excel spreadsheets and stuff like that. They may have been overfunding 401ks at their work for a very long time, trying to grow a lot of after-tax dollars, thinking they would be able to separate it when they leave work. Or they may have already left work and they haven't moved the 401k yet for a variety of reasons. I agree. It's not everyone who's going to be impacted by this, but everyone who does do backdoor Roths, you're out of luck, because if you've already done your backdoor Roth for this year, by the time you do next year's and the law changes, you won't be able to do it. But I agree. It's not everyone who needs to worry, but I would say a good portion of our listeners, I have no idea how many, but a good portion of our listeners, it applies to them, and they're probably contemplating, is it worth paying taxes on, say, $130,000 in order to get $180,000 into a Roth? Because $50,000 of that, folks, in my hypothetical example, is after-tax contributions.
Well, you're only going to get $50,000 into the Roth, not $180,000, but the $180,000
is total.
You
could convert the whole.
Well, you could convert the whole thing. Yes, yes, yeah.
Yes, you convert the whole thing to get all $50,000 in. Right. So you get $180,000 in my example, but you only had to pay taxes on $130,000.
Right.
Is it worth doing? That's the issue that you have to figure out. Now, do keep in mind the pro rata rule, folks. If you're doing that, if you got multiple IRAs, all the IRAs have to get in. I mean, we don't want to get too deep into it. If you're a longtime listener, you should know it by the back of your hand now. But anyways, let's get to some questions that have arisen with Roth conversions, okay?
Okay.
All right. The first one, let me pull that up. This first one is fairly straightforward. There's a little bit of confusion here, I think, on what she did and the pro rata rule. So it begins, dear Jim and Chris, I love your show. Let's see, where are they from? California. So she gives her real name. We will call her Georgette because it is a woman from California. I love your show and look forward to the podcast every week. In 2018 and 2019, we did backdoor Roth contributions for my spouse, who at the time had all of his assets, retirement assets, in a 401k. In 2020, we did the back door, but then, and here it is, Chris, but then I rolled his 401k into an IRA that same year. And I mistakenly did the backdoor Roth contribution. Right. Before I go on, why don't you explain to our listeners what this is going to do?
Well, the problem with this is the pro rata rule is you've got to account for the pre-tax and after-tax monies in a proportional basis when you're dealing with all of your IRAs. When the IRS wants you to calculate the balance, you know, the proportions themselves, is not at the beginning of the year or when you do the contribution or conversion, but the end of the year. So they look at those end of year balances in order to determine if there's a pro rata rule to apply. She undermined her ability to do the full backdoor clean contribution by rolling the 401k out to an IRA before the end of the year, before they saw, okay, here, December 31st, are there any balances that are pre-tax money? If so, there's a pro rata rule involved here. She didn't have it until she rolled out the 401k into the IRA, and now there's probably a big balance here. So the pro rata balance is way off, right? It's mostly going to be considered pre-tax that was converted, not after-tax. That's the conundrum she's created for herself.
Exactly, folks. Had she not done that, her husband could have put the $7,000 in like he did. If he had no other IRAs, listeners, none. All his money was in employer plan. So they used to do the back door. They did it in 2018. They did it in 2019. But last year in 2020, he did it. He put $7,000 in. Since he had no other money in an IRA, he had $7,000 of after-tax money just sitting in an IRA. And then he converted it into a Roth
tax-free
IRA.
Tax-free rollover into the Roth.
It's why they called it the back door. They make too much money, this couple, to contribute to a Roth. But the back door is anybody can put after-tax dollars into an IRA. So he puts after-tax dollars into an IRA. Because he has no other IRAs, there's no pro rata issues. His IRA contains 100% after-tax money. So he puts it into an IRA. Next day, he puts it into a Roth as a conversion. Totally legal. And for all those people, for years, Chris, you and I have been saying the back door is totally legal. And a lot of people, some very smart people in our industry who will remain nameless, and you know who I'm talking about, always said the step doctrine rule, don't do that, don't do that. Even after the Tax Cuts and Job Act and the IRS pretty much graced doing them, Chris, this particular very, very bright person in our industry kept saying, still don't do them.
Yeah, he still does.
He still does.
I just saw it the other day.
But as Ed Slott pointed out to us, he sent us all out an email. I don't know if it's actually him personally. He probably has one of his minions write it. But he said, for everyone who thought, I'm paraphrasing, for everyone who thought the back door was not okay or legal to do, why would they be contemplating writing a rule to stop doing it?
Exactly.
It's legal to do, and they realize it. So I feel bad for all the people who got advice throughout the years who could have been doing this from their CPA and advisor saying, don't do it, don't do it. If it wasn't legal, they wouldn't be writing a law to get rid of it. But anyways, what this couple did is the husband put 7,000 in, folks. He converted it. It was all after tax. But as Chris rightly pointed out, then they moved the IRA. So a lot of people thought, Chris, and still think, as long as on the day of conversion, I don't have any other IRAs, I'm okay. There is no pro rata. But they moved, and it was a very big account, as you'll see in a minute. They moved the 401k, folks, after doing the contribution and then conversion. They moved the 401k, and lo and behold, at the end of the year last year, they found out, wait a minute, we have to use the December 31st balance of our IRAs. So what happens is that $7,000, we call it cream, folks, that $7,000 of cream had to be mixed with a huge IRA that was moved over from the 401k. She doesn't tell us how big, but you'll see in a minute, she writes, nearly all of the $7,000 was taxable.
Yeah. So it's not like the end of the world. All she did was she did an inadvertent $7,000 Roth conversion of pre-tax dollars into after-tax dollars. That's all. So hopefully she's not considering this some major event that destroyed her life. It is. Let's keep this in perspective.
No, true. You'll see in a minute I might as well give some of my answer now. The problem's going to be for the rest of their lives, you have to keep filing 8606 to keep track of $7,000 of basis and what I estimate to be nearly $1 million, if not more.
Maybe they can roll it back into the 401k real quick and clean it.
Right. Because again, listener, if this rule passes, that $7,000 will never be able to ever be put in a Roth. Right. And you're always going to have to file Form 8606. But I think you'll pay more in stop doing it and leave it in there. Yeah. And 8606.
The consequences of that is they effectively will be double taxed on the $7,000.
On the $7,000,
That's the penalty. But you get out of a lifetime of tracking that little bit and reporting it. So,
on every single withdrawal, you would have to file an 8606.
Right, yeah.
And if you hire people to do your taxes for you, you're going to pay more in their time to file that form than you're going to save in taxes.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back into her question. Okay, that same year, I mistakenly did a backdoor Roth contribution and paid taxes on almost the entire $7,000 because of the pro rata rule.
Yeah.
We could probably figure out how much was moved, but a lot was moved if nearly all of that $7,000 is subject to taxes. Since he now has all of his – here's where she's making a mistake, Chris. Listen to what she writes. Since my husband now has all – of his after-tax IRA contributions into his Roth because we converted it.
No.
Let me finish before you start
okay, go ahead.
Bursting her bubble. Where did I leave off? Since he now has all of his after-tax IRA contributions in his Roth, is his traditional IRA now have an after-tax basis of zero? Am I going to have to file Form 8606 every year moving forward? The total after-tax traditional IRA, that part doesn't matter. She tells us throughout the years, for the 3 years, 2018, 19, and 20, they put $18,500 of after-tax dollars in. But don't forget, listener, in 18 and 19, you did it right.
Mm-hmm.
So in 18 and 19, those contributions, they are not in your husband's IRA anymore because you did the backdoor correct. But why don't you answer her question on if she has basis in that large IRA? That's okay. Where she's making the mistake.
Right. So when she made the comment, when she discovered that she paid taxes on nearly all of the $7,000 rollover, that was because only a small fraction of that was considered the after-tax basis that went over. Of the $7,000 of after-tax basis she had in there in 2018 and 2019, the whole amount of that went over. There was no pro rata in effect. But in 2020, last year, she was pro rated significantly. And so of that $7,000, maybe, you know, $6,980 of it was considered before tax money, which means only the little bit, maybe $20 or some small fraction of it was after tax basis that went over to the Roth. The rest of that after tax basis, so maybe $6,950 or $80 or something, is still sitting in the traditional IRA. That's what would, if you want to track that. Now, if you don't track it, all that means is, as it comes out, you're not going to claim it as basis, and you're going to end up reporting it as income, and that's where you're going to get taxed a second time on it, because you already taxed the first time since it wasn't deducted when it went in the very first place. That's probably what I would do. But if you want to track it forever and ever, as long as that IRA has money in it, you're going to have to track that 6,900 and whatever it is, and then every year that money comes out, it's going to come out in a pro rata form, and a little bit of basis will come out. The rest of it will be before tax money, which will be reported as ordinary income, and you'll have to update your 8606 every year for the lifespan of that particular account. So, is it worth it? I'm suspecting no. But if you wanted to do it and keep track of it, because it just rubs you the wrong way that you are going to pay tax twice on that $6,950 that you've already paid tax on, you're going to have to track that. I'd use the word forever, because when the IRA balances go to zero someday, then you won't have to track it anymore.
Well, hopefully it won't go to zero, but
someday it's going to.
Well, hopefully it won't. They'll.
What do you mean?
It doesn't have to go to zero.
Yes, it will.
How?
How good does an IRA last forever?
If you only took out the RMD every year, IRA will never run out.
During your lifetime?
Yeah.
They're not going to live forever.
But then they don't have to worry about the form. That's someone else's problem.
Well, no, I know, but that's going to be in there as long as there's a balance in there. But it won't be forever, because that account can't last forever. That was my point.
Personally, if it was me... Personally, if it was me, listener, I have no idea how much of that $7,000 is actually basis. Chris figured $50, $20 worth. I don't know. I don't know how much you have in there as basis, but I would just ignore it, not even file 8606. No. And so you have to pay taxes again.
Chalk
on that
up to a simple. If that's the worst mistake you make in managing your retirement finances, kudos to you.
Pat yourself on the back. Yeah. Just double tax that after-tax money and forget tracking it with 8606.
Yep.
But that's my opinion. Right. If you're one of these do-it-yourselfers and you're really anal on getting everything done, crossing every I and dotting every T, then just
or
by...
vice versa.
Huh?
You cross T's and dot I's. I'm listening.
Yeah, I know.
You said it the other way.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You said cross your I's and dot
roll.
Your T's.
That's say fine. What?
It's okay. It's just a gymism. Cross your I's and dot your T's.
No. Cross your T's and dot your I's. I say cross
your I's and dot your T's.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You listen to what I mean, not what I say. Don't you know that by now?
Well, the problem is if I just let it go, people think I'm not paying attention.
Oh. Yeah. If you're a new listener, I'm going to screw up names and sayings. Just get used to it. But anyways, what I'm saying, listener and listeners, all jokes aside, sometimes it just is worth not dealing with 8606 forever and just saying, screw it, I'll pay the taxes again on that little bit of basis.
Right.
Okay, this next question is not really a Roth conversion question, but I wanted to address it because it's a novice investor and he admits that. And I kind of want to help him just to get a little understanding of things. So he begins, where is he from? Does not say. All right. But he does say he's 60 and he wants to retire at 62. He says, my company offered me a lump sum pension payout. I accepted it, and it will be sent to me in December of 2021. Mm-hmm. I want to roll the pension into an IRA so I can delay immediate taxes. He said, after rolling it, I want to invest in ETFs, index funds, and cryptocurrency. I would love your advice on this because I'm a novice investor. So my question is, what will be safer for me, moving it to a traditional IRA or a self-directed IRA? Let me explain a few things, listener. A traditional IRA and a self-directed IRA are pretty much one in the same. Self-directed is just an industry term used to indicate the custodian who is holding or offering the IRA and holding the assets and investments you request be purchased in that IRA. That's what a custodian does. They hold the assets. They file legal paperwork with the IRS. They're kind of the repository, if you will. A self-directed custodian, which you're calling a self-directed IRA, that's an industry term. There is no special IRA called self-directed that you're going to check a box on the application indicating it's quote-unquote self-directed. Self-directed is an industry term used to describe a custodian that allows people to own non-traditional assets inside an IRA. Mm-hmm. Most custodians are what we would call a traditional custodian, and they're only going to deal with more traditional assets, ETFs, mutual funds, stocks, bonds. Some will allow alternative holdings, unit investment trusts, mm-hmm. things like that. But if you want to get into private placements, partnerships, LLCs,
real estate,
that's the big one. Gold, not the ETF gold or a mutual fund in gold, but the actual metal, a big hunk of chunk of gold. Those custodians are called self-directed custodians, and they are much more receptive and have a business model geared towards non-traditional assets. I'm not going to answer which one is safer for you, a self-directed custodian or a traditional custodian, but you do say you are novice. Mm-hmm. If you open it with a self-directed custodian and start getting into some really wacky stuff that you might not quite understand, you could very easily make a mistake in the self-directed IRA, a mistake called a prohibited transaction, which we don't want to get too deep into. But if you ever do a prohibited transaction, and we talked about this ad nauseum on prior podcasts, if you make a mistake, it will blow up your entire IRA and make it immediately taxable to you. So if you start getting into the realm of self-directed custodians, you're going to get into that. ETFs, which you indicated you want to buy, they can be held inside a traditional custodian such as Vanguard, TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab, any of the big ones. I'm just giving those as examples. I'm not pushing one over the other. Same thing with index funds. No problem in a traditional custodian. Crypto, you're going to have to ask the custodians if they allow it. I would imagine some don't and don't want to deal with it. Some might. You may want to get on the phone, ask the custodians if they will allow you. I don't invest in that because I don't understand it. I don't know what the hell it is. I know a lot of you do-it-yourselfers like it. I want nothing to do with it right now. But again, if you are a novice investor by your own admission, be very careful buying things, you might be tracking on an internet forum, and everybody's saying, oh, this crypto, you know, this XYZ cryptocurrency thing is phenomenal. And this, I don't even know the names of all these cryptos, Chris, and who creates them, but I just envision some people sitting back laughing as other people buy stuff that is just existing in the digital world. But again, if you want to do that, be very careful. You're a novice investor. Don't throw all your money at it.
Yeah, especially since you decided to take on more risk in your first decision, which was to take the lump sum, where now the burden of making it work is on you rather than the burden being on the pension fund itself by taking the traditional pension. You've pulled that trigger. This could easily compound into far bigger problems if you let it get away from you and start doing things you may not fully understand. So we don't have all the data about why you made that decision, and it's been made, it sounds like, so there's no reason to revisit it, but you now it's on you to make this all work out. So make sure you fully understand what you're getting into. If you don't understand it, don't take someone else's word for it. That's my general rule with investing in general. If you can't describe it to your 6-year-old, or to your grandmother, if they're still around, it's probably too complicated. Because there's lots of stuff that aren't that complicated that are going to work out just fine. So keep that in mind. We pitch being simple here. You're certainly, age-wise, young enough to be absorbing new information and learning about these things and stuff like that. But there's a lot of stuff out there that doesn't seem to be as scary as it really is, and then it turns out to be a giant disaster. So make sure you're staying away from that stuff.
Exactly. Okay, so good luck, listener. But again, self-directed just references the type of custodian and the assets they'll let you hold. I have no idea how they got the name self-directed, but that name kind of sticks. And that's when you hear self-directed, it's kind of an alternative asset custodian.
Well, it's still kind of on you. It's not like they're not going to protect you from this stuff. And that's the problem. You can get into the weeds and get into a lot of trouble using these because they grant you the ability to make decisions on a bunch of stuff that a traditional custodian has decided it's, too complex and too filled with mines, landmines to deal with. And I think that might be where it came from. I'll see if I can look it up because I'm curious now exactly who coined that phrase.
No, that makes total sense because you can call a traditional custodian usually and talk to one of their phone reps. And depending on the size of your IRA, they may give you someone who might give you some advice on some of the investments you want to buy. I know Vanguard does this, and I think Schwab does, and I would assume TD does, the custodian we use. So that might be what they mean. On a self-directed custodian, they will never, ever give you advice on what you're buying. Right. And they make that perfectly clear. The best example of it, folks, you all heard this story. If you're a longtime listener, I'll make it real quick, Chris, the goat farmer. If you remember when I was hiking a long time ago, this is going back a decade now, I think, or more. Mm-hmm. I was hiking in Rocky Mountain National Park back when there wasn't 10,000 people a minute moving through that park. I used to hike in there all the time. There was a gentleman hiking behind me. I always remember it was one of those coolish, foggy mornings and sound just goes up in the mountains. Yeah. And this guy was talking rather loud. He's not like me. He wasn't quiet, calm, cool, serene. And he's talking to his friend about his Roth IRA, and he had bought a goat farm in Illinois. Mm-hmm. Inside his Roth IRA, and he was looking forward to going to Illinois shortly, meet up with his brother, and start working the goat farm. And he was going to raise goats with his brother with the goat farm that he had just bought in his Roth IRA. And I couldn't I had to stop, Chris. I did, because he can't do that. We won't get too deep in. And it wasn't the brother that screwed things up, which is the weird thing. It was the fact that he was going to work it. And you can't do that. If you buy any non-traditional asset inside an IRA, you can receive absolutely no benefit from it.
Nor can you provide value to it, which is what he was going to do, was fix it up and,
Well, he was also going to eat the goat.
Oh, there's that too. Yeah.
A couple of goats. So he can't do anything with it. So anyways, folks, I stopped on the trail, waited for him to catch up to me, introduced myself to him, told him I couldn't help but hear, and he can't do what he's doing. He got really, I told you that, he was kind of pissed off and was not friendly to me at all. But I had told him that I had an office in Fort Collins. I must have told them my name. I don't know. And it was about a week or two later. I can't exactly remember the exact time. I got an email from him. And he, I would assume, looked us up on the internet and got my email, Chris, thanking me. And that he finally researched it and found he was, I was right. But he asked kind of a rhetorical question. He does not know why the custodian didn't tell him any of this when he bought the goat farm. I'll tell you why the custodian didn't tell him anything. They don't.
Right.
That's why the self-directed. You're on your own.
Yep. They're not helping you at all. That's basically what they're doing, is they're going to file all the paperwork and act as a legal custodian, but you're on your own. It's your deal. We're just going to record the paperwork. Make sure you don't screw up, because it's not our fault if you do. That's, they're absolving themselves from any liability by never giving advice on this stuff for reasons like we just described.
Right. So, you tell us to buy it, we'll buy it, but
we'll do the paperwork. Hope you do it right. Follow the rules.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm guessing that's how they got self-directed. All right. Let's get in.
No, unfortunately, that's got to be it.
Huh?
Yeah, we're over an hour already, so. Sorry. Or we're right at an hour. But that's all the time we had.
Huh.
Went kind of long on the preamble, so. And then these
questions.
That was
only 11 minutes.
Well, I know. And then these
questions. Well, let's go 11 minutes longer.
Well, we can record that another day. That's the problem. I've got a presentation.
I'm trying, folks, to get one more question in, but it's not working.
If you let me answer it, short and sweet, then you can do it.
He actually leads with your question. I mean, your name, so I'll let you answer.
Well, I hope I'll know the answer. If not, I'll say I don't know, and that'll count.
You will, but you're going to answer it a hell of a lot briefer than I would have.
Okay.
All right. And this is kind of a unique one, because he actually wrote back a week later getting an answer from the custodian. So let's see if your answer matches the custodian.
Okay.
All right. So anyways, he begins with, "Hello, Jim and Chris." Mm-hmm. So that was his first mistake. And then he corrected himself and he wrote, "Or if this will get my answer answered, my question answered quicker, hello, Jim and Chris." But he began with Chris and Jim, so I'll let you go first. "I've listened to all your podcasts, and it is the best in my opinion." Well, thank you very much, folks, on that. Okay, I will skip his little thing. He divides his time, Chris, between the dry West Nevada and the humid Louisiana. And he says, "I will never, ever, ever get used to humidity, no matter how long I stay in Kentucky." He just wants to point that out. All right, here's his question. "I have a very large 401k. 94% of it is pre-tax. 6% is Roth contributions. I'm not sure." He tells us stuff that's not pertinent. That's what he says. "I'm not sure if this is pertinent." It's not. Let me get to his little question. Okay. "Is there a way for me to only move the 6% of that 401k that's in a Roth out of the 401k and into my Roth IRA? Or am I going to get stuck with some sort of pro rata rule that's going to require me to move the entire 401k just to get my Roth money into a Roth?"
Depends on the rules of his plan, but he oftentimes will be able to get just the Roth out alone. But it depends on the rules of the plan. The nice thing is there's no pro rata. It's more the plan rules on what they, if they force you to take, you know, all of it, if you're going to take a distribution and take both. But my guess is most modern plans keep these separate and would allow you, when you're granted access, he might be too young or working for them still, et cetera, can't take distributions or rollouts easily yet. But as long as he has access to the money, he most likely can get just the Roth piece by itself. There's no pro rata issue either way. It's just a matter of, do they let you access just that piece by itself? And they most likely do.
Correct. The IRS does not impose a pro rata on Roth, non-Roth. Plans do.
Right.
I believe, and I don't think the TSP fixed this when they quote-unquote modernized a few years ago. TSP people out there, write to me if I'm wrong on this.
I think
please.
They still pro rata.
I think they still pro rata. If you have the TSP, you have the traditional. Again, TSP is Thrift Savings Plan, folks. It's kind of a 401k for government employees. But since there's 2.5 million of them out there, we talk about TSP sometimes. I believe the TSP is a good example of what this listener was afraid of. The TSP, I believe, if you have the Roth TSP and the traditional TSP, if you call for a distribution, they will pro rata it between the Roth and the traditional, and you have no say in the matter. So if you got 30% in your Roth and 70% in your traditional, and you take 10 grand out, you're going to get 7,000 taxable and 3,000 not taxable. And you can't just say, give me my Roth. I want to take this out of my Roth side, or give me just my traditional. So the IRS doesn't mandate pro rata in the case of Roth traditional. Custodians or plans, it would be the plan, not the custodian. Right. The custodian will do whatever the plan orders. The plan sets the rules. And that, Chris, is what his custodian, which was Fidelity, got back to him. So he wrote about a week or two later and he said, hey guys, I finally received an answer from the Fidelity specialist who is the custodian of my plan. So no need to answer this question. The reason I wanted to answer the question, Chris, other people might benefit from it. Just so you know, the answer is yes, for my plan, the Roth portion of the 401k can be separated and I can remove just that and move it to the Roth IRA. But they told me that the answer is actually plan specific.
Exactly.
So your answer was exactly what Fidelity told them.
Yeah.
So do keep that in mind, folks. If you are contributing to a Roth 401k, you may also want to find out from your plan when it comes time to taking the money out, are they going to pro rata it with your non-Roth 401k. That could impact what you end up doing. Or if you're going to keep your money at the 401k after retirement, if they pro rata and you don't want to pro rata, you might want to close the entire 401k or TSP. And at that point, move 100% of the Roth into a Roth, which you will be able to do even if they pass this law, because it's Roth money. It is not after-tax money in the traditional 401k. Right. It's after-tax money in a Roth 401k.
Right.
That will be able to move, Chris, into a Roth IRA. But if they subject it to pro rata, you may have to move the entire 401k to get all of it into the Roth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Last thing I'll say, although you're extending this way farther than you promised you would, but just because your 401k is at Fidelity doesn't mean the answer this person got will be the same answer you got, because it's very Fidelity here is acting as the record keeper and will follow the rules of the plan. So they provide these services to a lot of different plans. It's the plan at your employer that defines how this works. And that's why the Fidelity rep told this person what they did. But I wanted to make sure people don't think, oh, I'm also with Fidelity, so it'll work this way. That's not it. It's that the plan had these rules. Fidelity is simply implementing the rules. So you could be with Fidelity and have a completely different answer than what this person had with their 401k at Fidelity. Wanted to make that last point, but that's got to be
true.
It.
True.
So thanks everybody.
And thank you everybody. Next time I talk, I will be in a place called Monroe, Ohio. Again, if anybody's in that area and want to get together, please reach out to me. Just send me an email, jim@jimhelps.com, and we'll try to get together and do that. And if any TSPers are out there, if Chris and I were wrong that it's no longer prorated, please let me know. Or if we're right, can you please let me know for future shows? But I'm pretty sure it hasn't been fixed, Chris.
I believe that's true as well.
Yeah, I believe they still prorated that. Okay, thanks, people. And I will be broadcasting from the fine state of Ohio next to Northern Kentucky next time we chat.
Perfect. Well, everybody have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week on a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jim, H-E-L-P-S.com, or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.